All right, here we go on this Thursday, another edition of the MMA Insiders. When there's basketball on, we like to keep you updated because, you know, we are live and local until 7. The Rockets are fighting back into the game, but still down 55-37, 2.5 minutes left. So we got a guest. We got a guest co-host here because the regular crew, we'll talk to Adam Hill in just a little bit. They're down in Dallas for UFC 211. Ryan McKinnell.
You replace the big guy with the Big Mac. You like to surround yourself with large, intimidating individuals, Cofield. Is it an insurance? Is it an insurance policy? What's up?
I don't know about the intimidating part. I know you talk a good game.
Yeah, I'm a teddy bear.
Adam doesn't even talk a good game. That's the sad part. No, I've actually been accused many times of making sure that I pad myself with big fellas.
Yeah,
just as a almost a thinning mechanism.
Like a average college chick.
Like we too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Good for you, man. I mean, I'm actually. Don't let age age you.
Oh, it's aging me. I'm actually the radio version of Chubby Chaser.
Oh, that's how I got married.
You actually, you scored pretty well.
Yeah, the world needs Chubby Chasers.
Is this bad? Is this bad for the audience? I actually, you can text us, 69187. Don't take this in a bad way. I was actually shocked.
Yeah.
That you scored so well.
A lot of people are.
Yeah, but you are Big Mac.
It's that talking a good game thing. That's really
no,
all
you
it
really
is.
Do, and you're yeah. actually.
I did the same thing.
Yeah. Mark.
He actually scored pretty well, too.
Yeah, and I'm almost bald and everything.
Yeah. Oh, I'm all the way bald. You know? I'm bald and fat, and I got gray in my beard. I found a gray chest hair the other day.
I think me and Ryan just became, like, best friends.
Well, you'll
fat,
like
fat, gray, bald. Yeah, like.
It's just something about our voices, man. Something about the radio. I don't know.
He's chatty, too.
Aphrodisiac.
He can talk about anything. Seriously. We had dinner a couple of years ago. I was like, wow, this is. I can just sit here and be quiet and brood like I normally do, and no one's even uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because Ryan, he just goes.
I do. And you do. You remain eerily quiet when we have those conversations.
I know. I
always feel like you're, you know, collecting information and saving
That's
it
what
for
I am
later.
Doing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saving it for later. Here's the thing. We'll get off this in a second, and we'll get to our top six stories.
We promise.
No. Here's the thing. I was going to say abhor, but it's a little strong. I am bothered sometimes by radio people who have to be radio people all the time.
Yeah.
Like, we do our 3 or 4 hours. Like, that's enough. I can listen.
Yeah.
You know? And you know how you learn? You got to listen.
It's true.
Every once in a while, take in, especially with you guys, because I don't cover MMA like I used to.
Yeah.
So when I sit down with the experts like Ryan, you know, I'm catching up on things. So
the whole world can learn from Steve Cofield, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Just be quiet and listen and take it in.
Listen and learn.
That's right.
All right, so let's get to the top six stories here with our MMA six at six. You happy for boxing? I don't know if you're. Are you an anti-boxing guy? You like fights, right?
Last
2 weeks we had the big 90K fight in Wembley, heavyweight Joshua Klitschko, and then last week's fight. I'll just say this: the fight sucked. It was a big event. It did well at the gate, so overall, it's a success. So, you happy boxing did well the last 2 weekends?
Yeah. Listen, I feel like. When combat sports on the whole, when they run side by side and the interest is there on both ends, mixed martial arts and boxing, you see what can happen, especially with this McGregor-Mayweather talk and all that stuff. But even Rousey-Mayweather, now that the UFC is kind of parallel in certain aspects to the popularity of boxing, that conversation can kind of flourish. So I do like when both sports are doing well. And you mentioned Canelo and Chavez from the past weekend. I don't know if you caught this, but it looks like the estimated number is potentially going to be 1 million per Kevin Ioli at Yahoo. And for me, when I see 1 million in today's digital millennial age, like I know how many people stream illegal fights. I mean, I shouldn't say I know how many people in my friend circle do. And it's a lot. So when someone tips 1 million, or in the case of Pacquiao Mayweather and they do multi-million, it is a staggering number. And those and although the Canelo, you know, Chavez fight wasn't all that maybe we had hoped, the Joshua Klitschko fight was the best heavyweight fight I've ever seen live.
Really?
Well, I'm only 33. So I missed a lot of the golden era of the 70s and Ali in the late 60s and stuff. So for me, that Joshua Klitschko fight, and also watching it in the context of Klitschko, I think kind of being labeled a boring jab happy fighter for the majority of his career, right? Dr. Steelhammer on that last Saturday, he showed what he could do. Threw down, he got in a brawl, and he delivered. And like I said, the greatest heavyweight fight I've personally seen live.
So now the question is out there, hey, what's next? Well, we know what's next. Triple G and Canelo. What happens after that? Because you're going to have, they're going to do well on pay-per-view on that one. You're going to have a boxing star at a pretty high level. So Oscar De La Hoya was on First Take yesterday and started making the pitch for the winner of Triple G and Canelo to fight. Go ahead and fire it.
after this fight with Canelo and Golovkin, you know, I mean, forget about the notorious one,
Conor McGregor.
Forget about a fighter who has zero experience, who has zero fights, who has a zero amateur experience. Forget about that. Mayweather's better than that. Mayweather, look, if you want to fight and have a rematch against a Canelo or a fight against Golovkin, go after them. You know, after Canelo and Golovkin fight, go after the winner.
Now, for me, there's two sides to those comments. I guess, one, I'm disappointed that anyone in boxing needs to still lean on Floyd Mayweather for relevance. Let's move on. But from the pure boxing standpoint, I actually like what he's saying, because I think we all agree. Spectacle, yes. Fun to cover. Great pre-fight. McGregor.
Gives us plenty to talk about.
And Mayweather. But the fight itself, you can never convince me that Floyd should be fighting a guy, as he said, with zero boxing matches instead of a Triple G coming out of a victory, you know, over Canelo or vice versa.
I don't disagree. I think Triple G versus, you know, Mayweather's the best fight you can make in combat sports, personally. That said, you know, McGregor's sitting at 49-0. You can't blame him for wanting the easy fight. He's going to get $60 million to go out there and beat a guy who couldn't even win on a local Golden Gloves amateur circuit.
Go higher.
Yeah.
That's the other problem.
Yeah, it's true.
He has a no-risk fight that's purely a promotion.
Yeah.
He's going to make in excess of probably 100, and he probably can't make as much money against the boxers. And those are risky fights now.
And not even the money in the sense of the Golovkin fight, the danger that a fighter like Triple G possesses, right? You know, he takes that loss, everything that made him special and everything he says, it goes away overnight. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have necessarily the resume to lean on a one loss. The thing that makes Mayweather special, outside from his outstanding skills and pedigree, you know, which he does have for his generation, you know, it's that undefeated record he's got, and Triple G would test that. So at his age, I can't necessarily blame him for wanting to take the easier fight, but yeah. You touched on the absurdity of the fight from a skill standpoint. It would be like Michael Jordan going straight in to play for the Yankees. You know what I mean? He's just so in over his head. Mm-hmm. He really is.
Can we get some of those whooshy numbers that we have for Big Five? I like those transitions. Can we do that? Ryan McKinnell's in with us as we program on the fly here. Sirius XM, Channel 93. I think we're on five now. We're going to do our six, so I think we're going to go with number five. I'll just do it. Number five. Anyway, we'll have him in a second. The other big thing that came out of the store, or the out of that fight, was like just this video out of nowhere. Guy who's a pretty good media guy, Marco Villegas, catches Dana White, who's at the fight, at the boxing match.
Yeah.
And Dana White just blurts out, he's, you know, once he finds out that September 16th is going down, it's Triple G against Canelo, he's like, well, there goes my date. And everyone's like, well, date for what? And then he confirms that was one of the dates he was working on for Conor and Floyd.
Felt like promoting on the fly to me. It wasn't, you know, a lot of times Dana will have an interview set up and he knows what he wants to say. That was one of those reactionary kind of responses. And Marcos did a great job catching him. I think he tipped his hand a little bit there. I think he's shown time and time again now, and especially with that comment, that he doesn't have the power in this negotiation. He's kind of, you know, he's trying to play like he is. He's trying to act like he is, but we all know who holds the cards here, and that's Money Mayweather. It's been that way in combat sports for the last decade, ever since he fought De La Hoya. So,
all right, what do you think of this one? There's a deadline now. Come on, bro. Really?
There's a deadline for you giving away more money than you'd like to give away. That's all this is. You know, White saying that McGregor has to sign on the dotted line by Sunday, this and that, or the fight goes away. He's trying to pressure the wrong guy. Every time you've tried to pressure McGregor, he sits out. He does whatever he wants. And he wants to fight, you know, Mayweather. Now, how long that lasts and how long that interest is there, I can't say. You know, the more time goes by, the older, you know, Mayweather gets, and the more people like me go on local radio and talk about the sham that the McGregor-Mayweather fight is. So I think that the interest slowly dwindles as time passes.
Number four.
Yeah, I like it. 211 was a jam card in Dallas. It did lose a fight, though.
Yeah.
You know what happened with Henry Cejudo and Sergio Pettis?
Well, from reports, you're hearing that Cejudo broke his hand. Which, when you hear that the week of the fight, it immediately, I mean, you saw the Twitter sphere, Cofield, the everyone, the conspiracy theories were out, the tinfoil hats were out, everyone wanted to know how this could possibly happen. I will say, for the people that are buying the pay-per-view, it looks like you're getting a better pay-per-view because the UFC bumped up Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez to the main card, I believe. And that, for your $59.99, is a, you know, it's Cejudo and Pettis is a great fight, but let's not kid what Poirier and Alvarez is going to be. That's going to be one of the better fights on the card.
Eddie Alvarez is one fight away from being the 155 champ, the best division in the world.
Sure, and they're both extremely high-output fighters, and not just like, oh, they've been surging recently. Alvarez and Poirier for a decade have both, any fight they're in,
right,
it's a fight I'd pay $10 for. That's kind of how I break down a pay-per-view card. Individually, would I pay $10 for this fight? Yes, I would. And there's honestly three or four of those fights on the main card, so yeah, it took a hit with Cejudo and Pettis, but it's not the worst thing.
I guess the bad part,
yes,
for both guys,
I know
a payday
going.
Injury, yeah. The 125 division needs fights and needs to develop names behind Demetrius Johnson.
Yep.
So that part sucks.
It does suck. And when you're, especially when you're dealing with a guy, in my opinion, Cejudo, who got rushed into his title opportunity against DJ. So I'd like to see more out of him, and this would have been a great fight, fighting a flashy striker like Pettis. And Pettis is so young. It was a great test for him. It was a great fight. You're not wrong.
What do you think of Cejudo's future now?
Oh, I think it's still bright. He's still got the pedigree.
All right, DJ leaves the division.
Yeah.
He starts fighting 135. Can Cejudo be the guy?
Yes. Absolutely. Strictly, I mean, he's proven it. Outside of fighting DJ, you know, Cejudo doesn't really have many problems in the division. And that pedigree that he possesses, it's all world. It can't be neglected. And he's still young, and he's one of those fighters, I like to say, from a fight-to-fight basis, visually, he gets better. And I enjoy watching that.
And I thought his fight against Benavidez was super impressive. I thought they both walked away winners. And Cejudo is a guy who comes from Olympic wrestling background. I thought his hands were nice.
Yep.
Which is, you know, that's the hardest thing to learn for wrestlers.
And Benavidez is not an easy striker to mix it up with. Yeah. He comes from weird angles. You know, he's got weird pacing, and he's high output. So you're absolutely right. That was a win for Cejudo.
Number three.
This is a story that I haven't seen a whole lot of coverage on in MMA, and maybe it's because it's NFL related, but I noticed this before the draft, and I called it out, and it had to do with Reuben Foster, a top five kid, linebacker from Alabama. So for the 3 months before the draft, everyone had that kid top 10 in the NFL draft, every mock draft. He gets in trouble at the combine. He gets in some sort of dust up.
Right.
Right? Screaming match with
something like that.
Details are a little scarce. With medical personnel kind of pulled a, do you know who I am? Okay. So we got an attitude there. Then I see there's some issues with a shoulder. He might need shoulder surgery again. And then I see his agent speaking on his shoulder. And I see the name Malki Kawa.
And that face.
And I was like, oh my God, this jabroni has somehow found his way into the NFL. I'm guessing, what would you assume? He represents... Here's the background with this guy. He represents John Jones.
Right.
I'm not saying he's, you know, pressing on the gas pedal in the car every time Jones gets in trouble. I'm not saying that he's out there pouring liquor into his face before he, you know, makes stupid decisions. I'm not saying he's throwing him women so that he can womanize on the side on his wife. But I do believe that he is one of the many enablers around John Jones,
without
and I think
question.
He's been terrible for his career.
I don't know what he's done in MMA.
Outside of the cage.
Yeah.
And then I see him representing an NFL player, and I'm like, oh, my God. Then you start hearing that teams are pulling the guy off the first-round board. And he actually wound up being a first round pick.
Yeah.
31 in the first round. The 49ers took him. The 49ers actually were considering, he's so good on paper, you know, on the field.
Right.
He's so good, his reputation was so good that the Niners were considering taking him at 2 or 3. I blame a lot of this on the agent and how important representation is. And by the way, I'm guessing that he got into the NFL circles because John Jones' brothers both play in the NFL.
Yep.
I hope everyone learns their lesson because this turned out to be almost a freaking tragic disaster. Nick Saban actually addressed it.
Really? He
didn't mention Malki Kawa by name, but he did say, look, the way we like things, or for things to get handled, that didn't get handled. We have the best doctors in the world who operate on most NFL players, and his agent...
Malki.
He didn't say a name, but...
Right.
His agent chose to take him someplace else. Do you realize the stupidity of not listening to Nick Saban and trusting...
The man's a pro factory.
Buffoon,
he turns out, yeah.
MMA agent? Like, what do you know about this guy in MMA?
Well, I know that he did, an interview, I want to say with Sirius, where this isn't a verbatim quote, but it's somewhere along the lines of, I'm not a schlubby MMA guy. He said something about not being a schlubby MMA guy. I pick out the best talent in mixed martial arts. I'm not a schlubby. Dude, you are an MMA guy. You were Carlos Condit. I don't know who he represents. I don't deal with Malky. I've been in the sport 10 years. I refuse to deal with Malky. If I'm going to interview John or Carlos, I get them on my own time at events or UFC media functions. I can't say. There's something about Malky in regards to the way he speaks. And that comment, it was a perfect highlight. I wish I had the exact quote. But he's just so degrading, and he's just so...
He's a child.
Yeah, he's absolutely a child.
He's a child, and it's not what you would expect from an agent. Like, no. He's part of the entourage.
And you got to think, right, when a player like Foster, with that pedigree and with the attention on him, when he picks up a straggler like Kawa, the whole NFL has to pay attention. Like, he did what? The John Jones guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they deal with all these different agents, and all of a sudden you're like, who is this, like, frat kid?
Yep. And that's essentially what he is.
Like, what's happening here? I thought that was really telling that Saban came out. Let's see, what did he also say? I think it's also important that Reuben Foster has people around him who will provide him good direction, have good experience, and the ability to anticipate what's happening so you don't get these emotional responses to things that are significant. And that last line is great because all along John Jones' path have been really poor decisions.
I'm not talking
about the original decision.
Right.
Ryan, I'm talking about the way they manage the mistake.
Right, by not managing the mistake.
And that's what happened here with Reuben Foster.
Absolutely.
He got bad pub at the combine for getting into a dust-up. Then there were lies about shoulder surgery. Then there was another issue. And, hey, that's the people around you, man. And in the NFL, you know the way it works. Like, once a bad rumor starts, people are like, you know what, we're out, man. This is too much money. The first-round pick is worth too much. I'm not rolling the dice.
I will say this. He's managed to get John Jones cheered and Daniel Cormier booed. So if he had any part of that, maybe he is worth the money because that's a miracle unto itself.
Quick time out here. Ryan McKinnell is going to stick with us as Adam Hill's coming up in about 15 minutes. We got UFC 211 going down this weekend, but we got major stories. We had what looked like a giant fight. They're going to bail on it for this year. So Bisping GSP is off for now. And Anderson Silva is now in this major beef with Dana White, and I kind of think he's right.
MMA Insider Show. It's the MMA Insiders. MMA Insider. The inside scoop and hardcore fight talk from the experts. Now, here's your hosts, Steve Cofield and Adam Hill.
Adam on the road. We'll check in with Mr. Hill in less than 15. He's in Dallas for UFC 211, which will be the focus in the back end of the program. Ryan McKinnell, nice enough to brave the traffic. Coming all the way from... You know what's funny is if someone complained about traffic here like 15 years ago, I'd have been like, you're a pansy, but it's gotten pretty ugly.
Well, and another thing, I never leave my house. So today was a rare exception. I saw sunlight for the first time all month. And yeah, it was just very, very stressful, very hectic, you know, being out in society with all that anxiety.
Are you like a 47-mile-per-hour guy too on a highway?
I have a black Mustang GT.
Oh, that's right, you do.
I'm not a 47-mile-per-hour guy. No. I'm an authoritative driver. I drive confidently. If I need to speed, I speed.
Right.
I haven't been in an accident in 10 years.
It's defense through offense.
Absolutely.
That's what I do.
Absolutely.
Yep. I know what I'm doing.
Spoken
I'm
like
attention.
A true East Coaster.
Yes, yes. It's defense. It's defense through offense. What's your call without getting yourself in trouble and targeted by Metro and HPD? What's your call on a guy like Dwight Howard popped for doing 95 and a 65?
Well,
like that would never happen to you.
No, I don't. Well, maybe the California drive, the LA drive through the desert. Yeah. I get it up triple digits sometimes, but yeah. I mean, no one's around.
God, I got nailed last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How bad?
Maybe 82 and a 65.
Where'd you get hit?
And that was dropped down
by Wickenburg.
Right past.
It was Phoenix drive or the LA drive.
It was coming back. It was Vegas to LA, but it was LA back to Vegas, and it was past Barstow, so right by the fruit stop.
Yep.
But I was obviously going the other way. And
that's a weak ticket. Yeah. I don't like that. I mean, there's.
I was totally caught in a pass situation. You know, I was like fired up to pass somebody, so he got me at a nice max speed. And then, but you know, I was honest. There was no John Jones action where I flipped out on the officer. He's like, Adam was amazed because Adam was in the car with me, and the officer was like, you know how fast you were going? I'm like, nah, not really. I'm like, I know I was going pretty fast.
He's like, but it felt safe.
Yeah,
it felt safe.
Yeah,
it felt controlled.
Safe. He's like, well, you're doing this, and I'm like. I probably was.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, I'm going to get you a ticket.
No warning.
Okay, sir.
Just dished you the ticket.
I never get warnings.
No, that's right.
Nah, that's a lie, actually.
No?
That's I've gotten warnings here and there.
I have.
Very rare, though. I've got a face that you like the ticket.
I blew past a backed up line at valet at Planet Hollywood about a year ago. My mom had to use the bathroom, and she was yelling at me and doing something. So I just
it's always your mom's fault.
It always is. I dropped it down.
I've
in the
seen
first
you and
gear.
Your mom on Facebook.
Yeah, well,
it gets ugly.
It can. So ever since November 8th, things have not been normal in my
household. One of the greatest Facebook rants I've ever seen. Ryan, probably on November 11th, was like, "That's enough. I've already told you, mom." And just, you know. Tough guy with that exaggerated typing. That was Ryan.
Gotta
get her in line.
I type swift. Yeah. There is no banging when I type, especially when it's about the orange guy. I go hard.
Top two stories.
Number two.
So, we've got some really big breaking stories this week. What is going on with Anderson Silva and Dana White and the 185 division? Anderson calling Dana the Almighty. And Anderson basically said, hey, the division to this point has been on hold. I'm sick of it. If I'm going to fight Romero, who should be fighting the champion, then I want an interim title shot. So what do you think of his rant?
Well, I liked the rant from the standpoint that he's one of the most powerful athletes that the UFC has ever had in terms of his voice. When he speaks, people listen. He's tenured. He's been there a decade, actually longer. And most people know him as one of the greatest of all time. So I like the fact that he spoke up. Steve, I wish he would have done it sooner. I don't know how much bargaining power he has at this twilight of his career, not being probably the draw that he once was, especially outside of South America. So I like what he said. I just wish he would have done it sooner.
All right, top story.
Number one.
Hand in hand. Number one, yeah. There's no chance. Did Dana actually listen to Anderson Silva, or what do you think prompted this one? The fight is off. GSP, George St. Pierre, Michael Bisping at 185 is now off. What do you think happened?
Well, the positive side, the glass half full side of me likes to believe that they did listen, that they did hear the fans and they did hear what people's discontent over this book super fight. Now, Steve, I'm going to tell you, I'm one of the very few apparently that didn't have a problem with this fight. I didn't have a problem, and I'll tell you why. Because for the last 3-4 years, the middleweight division has been held up by all sorts of stupidity. Chris Weidman went on his All-Brazil tour where he had to fight Machida and Belfort and get, you know, they tried to build him up as this Brazil killer. Meanwhile,
yeah, let's not even get into that.
Meanwhile, Luke Rockhold and Rockhold and Jacare Souza are sitting there. So yep. I was pissed 3 years ago, 4 years
You've
ago.
You've been angry for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Before, you know, they forced him to get clean and now he's getting destroyed. But Belfort, their loyalty to Belfort.
Lorenzo's, in my opinion. Lorenzo really, really, really likes Vitor from going back. I mean, they're old buddies. They go back years. They go back since, you know, Vitor been the face of that company, especially in the Southern Hemisphere, for a very long time. He's made a lot of money for him, and I think Lorenzo recognized that. The problem was removing your finger of the pulse. MMA fans are smart. I know some people don't necessarily agree with that, but we're an internet forum culture bred from hardcore fans, essentially.
They know frauds.
Yes.
And Belfort was a fraud.
He was a fraud, absolutely.
And it's insulting to keep putting him out there when he's all deflated. I mean, that was the worst example ever of a guy on and off.
Without question.
Everyone could see that he was off, and then he all of a sudden now he's a 39-year-old fighter. That's the way he looks. He's getting just destroyed, and you're holding up the division, and all these dudes who are on their way up at 185 to get essentially like the number 11 guy in the division in the mix in the top three over and over and over again.
You give him Luke Rockhold in South America where he can presumably test the drug waters, right? He can do his thing. Luke's first fight in the UFC. This guy's coming over from Strikeforce. He just beat Jacare. He's an all-world killer. So high, I've been so high on Rockhold for years. So to watch him being fed to the TRT, HGH wolves like that, it broke my heart. So now everyone wants to sit here and complain about the middleweight division. I just want to ask you, where were you 3 years ago? This division has been in shambles for a very long time. So I'm not going to sit here running around with my head cut off when George St. Pierre is coming back at 36 years old. And what my opinion is, I felt he needed a tune-up fight. And Steve, you know what the easiest fight for George St. Pierre was in two weight divisions for any contenders and or champions at 170 or 185? Michael Bisping. So it was a gimme fight for George, in my opinion. So I liked the fight. Yeah, I don't like the idea that we're holding off till November, but I think it was the easiest fight you could have made for George at 170, 185 amongst the contenders and champions without question.
I didn't have a problem with the fight.
Okay. I mean,
I wanted it sooner than later, but also realize that George had been off forever. Let's actually test guys when they come back.
Yep.
Right?
Right.
Let's not have a Lesnar thing where he's, you know, you basically know he's cheating.
Yeah.
No, he's cheating, and you give him a waiver, and then he gets popped and embarrasses you. And he walks away with his 15 mil. I also liked it from this standpoint. Bisping may be annoying and a loudmouth and sort of classless at times, but he's been a really good company guy, and he deserves the chance to have a massive payday, be part of a great promotion, and make a lot of money.
And let's not forget, he's been that loudmouth, out there promotional tool for a decade. He was the villain running side by side in that division to George St. Pierre's Gentleman. Right? He was so obviously the villain. George was so obviously the good guy. You know, the stuff can be talked about, weight disadvantages and all that, but George can put on the weight to be decent sized at 185. It was just a fight I really, really liked. And I am bummed to an extent that the fight is off, because I don't know if there's a guarantee Mike's going to fight before November. I don't know if this proposed Romero Bisping fight's going to happen. And I don't even know if the fight.
So you don't think it's going to happen?
I don't know if, keep in mind who this came from. This is Dana White saying the fight's off. You know?
Well, but this isn't after a fight when his head's all clouded and people are like, hey, who's the next matchup, you know?
Yeah.
Then when he doesn't know what the hell's going on.
That's true.
You know, and I don't blame him at that point, because you're trying to process so much. I mean, this is in between fights. I think they're going to make the Romero fight. He even said it. He's like, that's it. Yoel does not need to pitch.
But
he doesn't need to pitch that he deserves the fight. He's getting the fight.
That's true, but you fully acknowledge that this could be a promotional move as well, right? To expedite George's training, to play some leverage here.
God, I'm going to say this. I know they
victory!
Like, no, I know they've had a war with George for a couple of years now.
Yep.
And I think he's been fibbing a lot about George.
The fact that, his heart isn't in it. He's not a real fighter.
Yeah, it was all over the Reebok Under Armour thing.
Yep.
It was all over George flexing his muscle and knowing that, hey, there wasn't a lot of big fighters out there. You're going to pay me. And Dana didn't want to bow down to GSP. No, I don't think he would. I really believe that he wouldn't sit here and kind of set up Romero for a giant, you know, disappointment.
Again.
Yeah, I mean, they basically promised him the fight.
It's true.
Am I a moron for thinking that?
I know.
Like, two weeks from now, I'm like, he did it! He screwed over Romero again!
No,
because George said, I'm ready to go.
That would be the straw that broke the camel's back. Fans would be absolutely livid, especially for those people that really want Romero to take the fight. I thought Jacare beat him when they fought, but hey.
So
a couple
of amazing things about middleweight. And again, this is not a knock on Michael Bisping. I still don't think he's a better fighter than Luke Rockhold.
No.
He pulled off an upset against an extremely cocky guy who wasn't focused. We've all said this for a long time. You know, knowing people in Vegas, knowing the odds, Bisping would probably be a dog to about six or seven fighters at 185. He's a plus 220 dog if this fight is made against Yoel Romero. That's pretty crazy.
Get your money out, fans.
He's the champion.
I'd make him more of an underdog against Romero. I really would.
I would bet him at 220.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because I think Romero is also a round and a half fight guy.
You're not wrong. There are a lot of questions, I should say, surrounding Yoel Romero, especially given his age and lack of big marquee fights and, you know, numbered pay-per-views.
He's a guy who runs out of gas.
Yeah.
He also starts playing bullcrap tricks. He's gotten away with some, you know, real dirty tactics.
Some John Jones-esque
moves. I think Bisping would be smart enough not to get cracked early. But the problem is Romero does have the ability at any moment to land the punch, and you're out.
Still one of my favorite post-fight debacles in all time was his, what did he say about Jesus, the forget Jesus or gay Jesus?
Yeah, he tried to do an anti-homosexual take, and people were like, what did you say? No, that's not what I meant.
I love this sport sometimes.
One more on the story. Well, that's why it's so entertaining. I mean, so now if George doesn't get Bisping, he ain't getting Romero. If Romero wins the fight, there is no way they're making George St. Pierre's comeback fight against a guy who, for folks who don't listen or don't watch a lot of MMA, don't listen to this show, we'll explain it to you. Weight class-wise, Romero's a guy who probably walks around at about 210. They're not matching up the former 170 champ against a natural 210-pounder.
No, he's massive.
So what are they going to do?
Well, I think that's up to George. It's not what are they going to do. It's what George is going to do. George has quite obviously cherry-picked his opponents.
What would you do?
What he's going to do.
Well, who would be your opponent?
Mayweather, or excuse me, McGregor.
Mayweather.
See, look what you've done. Look what you've done, MMA and boxing. Look what you've done. They're synonymous with one another.
You would go right into McGregor.
Yeah, it's the big money fight. I don't think, you know, I remember when George, they were negotiating whether he was going to re-sign, and UFC brass had rumored to say, well, you know, the rumored number was $10 million, and, well, it's going to take a lot to reintroduce you back into the crowd. I don't believe that. I don't believe that fans need a reintroduction to George St. Pierre. I think they recognize him as one of the top draws and one of the greatest fighters of all time. So, yeah, give him McGregor. You could give him Woodley, but the danger of a Woodley fight is just through the roof. The same with Romero.
No.
So he's going to have to choose carefully, and you know what? See if he will, because he's a careful guy.
I like your plan. I wouldn't do it exactly the way you're doing it. I would not go after Conor first.
Book Anderson then.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's what I would do.
That's the two options, right?
You make the super fight that we never got.
Yep.
Anderson is still a little bit of a threat on the feet.
He won his last fight.
But George will tackle him and lay on him.
Yeah, and it's the fight.
He'll win the fight. You'll get the super fight. You'll get giant money.
Yep.
And then hopefully Conor's still rolling at that point. Even if he loses to Mayweather, hey, this is his big return to MMA against, you know, the former pay-per-view king.
And I know Canada's been a little upset recently. You could throw them a bone, no? Either do Toronto or New York and appease the Canadian fans and boost that market back up, because I think it's been dwindling a bit.
Quick 35 minutes. That's what happens with Ryan McKinnell, SiriusXM. Channel 93, he's got his pre-fight show for 2:11. 3 to 5 Pacific time, again on Channel 93. Adam Hill is on the road. UFC 211 in Dallas. What's up, buddy?
What's up? You going to spring some more breaking news on me like yesterday?
I know. I felt crazy. So bad, because, you know, the worst place to be informed when you're an MMA media person is actually when you're at events, because there's so much going on with, you know, all your efforts to get those individual features done. And so, yeah, yesterday I caught him off guard a little bit with the Cejudo cancellation against Sergio Pettis. Before we get to 211, well, let's get to a couple of the big stories we just hit. So what exactly happened with Bisping and GSP and that fight? And this isn't – Ryan was just throwing out, hey, is Dana White trying to pull a negotiating ploy on GSP with this threat? And my response was, there's no way they would do that to Romero, because they basically promised Romero a Bisping fight. So am I the idiot, or what's going on here?
I mean, I think everybody's talking today about, oh, the UFC finally realized they're holding up a division, and they realize Romero deserves a shot, and all these other things. I think the basic thing that happened is they couldn't get another fight to headline UFC 213. I think that's really all there is to this. I don't think there's any more to the story. Hey, we need a fight at 213. The Jones fight doesn't work there. St. Pierre's not going to be ready. They're looking around. Which fight is it going to be? And they just decided that's going to be the one. So, to
Adam,
me, that's
remind
what
the audience,
is.
213 is when and where?
That's the International Fight Week card at T-Mobile, July, 8th or 9th? I think it's the 9th.
So I
think that's all there is to it.
Really?
Well, it's not out of the realm of possibility, but do you think George would be ready? Because there's been questions about his weight and whether this is there was that picture that circulated around the internet. I don't know if it was doctored or not, but he had his gut out. Would he be ready for July?
No, that's what I'm saying. He's not. So they're going to do Bisping Romero, UFC 213.
Okay,
I think
gotcha.
I think that's all there is to this. I think they're looking around at what fight are we going to put there, and I just think they found a spot where they needed to have a fight, and they don't really have anything else lined up, and, you know, that's going to be the one. I think that's what you're going to see happen.
Adam, is Bisping versus Romero, though, the fight that can anchor that International Fight Week that for the last couple of years has been the benchmark weekend for the UFC?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is. I think that, you know, it's a good card if you combine it with Dillashaw Garbrandt, which is a really good fight as well. I think you have two solid title fights. I don't think it's that anchor fight that, you know, everybody expects at that weekend. I think it now ends up being just more, hey, we've got two really good title fights, and, you know, that'll be the attraction. But certainly it hasn't been the formula that they've used in the past on that weekend. I just think that they kind of got in a panic situation.
So a quantity over quality kind of situation. Not to say it's not quality, but you're envisioning them just stacking it for lack of that marquee fight.
Yeah, I think that's what they do. And obviously the Jones-Cormier fight would have worked better, but the dates are very weird. With Jones getting back just before, you know, just before that that fight comes up, and I think he's eligible 2 days before the fight. So I think that they want to push that back. So that'll be in Anaheim, UFC 214 later on in July. But I think what you'll see is I think you'll see the two title fights on that UFC 213 card.
I'm starting to wonder if they want to rethink these crazy types of weeks that they have coming up with three cards in 1 week. Because between injuries were already an issue and trying to make big fights, and now It seems like there's like 15 guys in a money beef. Like everyone is all emboldened now because of Conor McGregor, and this is
and the $4 billion that kind of helps people pay attention.
This was always the day that Dana White feared that he didn't have everyone under his thumb, and now everyone wants to be a negotiating guy, and they're having trouble making fights.
Yeah,
I mean the biggest one, right. the Diaz brothers. This is insane.
Well, it's also the era not only of everybody negotiating for more money and everybody wanting more money, it's also where some guys do get money, and I think that's the case with Nate. And you're like, yeah, I had my payday. Like I'm good. I don't need to fight again. If you want to give me an interesting fight that I can make a lot of money for, like I'll take it. But you know, you just gave me probably, you know, $5 million for a fight, and I'm good. I'm just gonna chill for a while.
I always love bringing up that line that Dana White, you know, would throw out there because they were doing it the right way and boxing wasn't, and he's like, we took the blueprint for boxing and we ripped it up and threw it out. Well, you know who didn't throw it out? The fighters. The fighters are like, yeah, we kind of like the way boxing was. Like, we want to make
money. Getting paid?
Yeah, we get money now. We have leverage and everything starts playing out in the public and the fans are against the promotion. The other breaking news of the day was a deadline set on a Conor McGregor Floyd Mayweather fight. It needs to be done by Sunday. What do you think of that?
That was not a serious question.
I'm
reading it. Damon Martin, 5 hours ago. Deadline Sunday. Dana says deadline. Let's go.
You did not have a straight face when you said the word deadline. I don't buy that.
I know. I did.
I was actually just thinking in my head about 5 minutes before we talked. I was like, man, I can't wait. I'm going to text Dana Sunday night and be like, hey, is this fight happening or is it officially off now? Like, okay, we're gonna have Sunday as a firm deadline. If we don't get it done Sunday, we're moving on. We're doing something different. What about Monday morning if he wants to negotiate? Okay, well, that'll work, too.
You know what's great about this? This will be, the most clicked story of the day. I guarantee it's all over TMZ Sports, and, you know, ESPN will run with it, too. Every freaking casual sports site, deadline! Fight's going to be off! Deadline!
Go check coveringthecage.com in a little bit, and you'll see the story.
How much did you fight them on this one?
enough. I tried. Listen, I know I'm going to lose the battle. Anytime there's a Conor McGregor mention, you know, you got to put it up now. But I will write it, you know, sarcastically enough that I'm not buying into the fact that Sunday is a deadline of any sort.
Adam Hill on the road in Dallas. Got a big card coming up. Excellent pay-per-view. Good depth on the card. Exciting fights. What's the fight that you want to see? And then we'll cover the rest of the fights. What's the fight for you?
Easy. There's no question about this. This is Yair and Frankie. I think this could be a main event. I mean, I know that, you know, for the average fan, I don't think that, you know, that sells a ton of pay-per-views necessarily. But, man, I think this has everything you could possibly want in a fight. It's a, you know, a style battle between Frankie's, like, toughness and grittiness and durability and everything that he has, his experience against the young, flashy, exciting striker. You've got all of that going. You've got the young guy trying to come up, trying to go against the guy who's been established and been a champion in the past. That champion, you know, still trying to hold on to being an elite level fighter. You've got all the different storylines all mixed into one fight. And what happens? I mean, I talked to Yair the other day about, do you tone it down now that you're in a, you know, a huge fight? Do you, you know, go against a guy like Frankie who could take advantage of your spins and take you down and maybe, you know, use that against you? And, you know, he said, absolutely not. I'm who I am. I'm going to do what I do, and I don't change for anybody. So I just think you're going to have who can establish themselves. If Yair gets into a rhythm and is, you know, throwing those kicks from all the different angles, he's incredibly tough to beat. And, he said, I can knock Frankie out. I don't care if nobody's ever done it. I can do it, and I want to do it. And it's something that he wants to prove. But, God, nobody's been able to do that for a reason. Frankie Edgar is just, he knows, you know, what he can take. He knows how to avoid shots. Even if it looks like it's hitting him, he knows how to deal with that and how to, you know, deflect enough of your power shots to not hurt him. And then he just keeps coming at you. Everything he does, I think this fight has everything you could possibly want in a fight. It's one of those that I think if you have a friend or somebody who isn't quite sure if they're in MMA or if they not like it, like, watch this fight. This is going to be awesome from every perspective. I think it's great.
Adam, does the winner of that fight get a title shot?
If his name is Yair Rodriguez, he does. I think, you know, there is no question that they are pushing Yair like to an extreme level. They want him to be champion. They want him to be the guy that really finally breaks through in Mexico. I mean, they're making progress, but they haven't really gotten over the top. And that's the guy that they want to do it. So I think, you know, if you go in and you have him, you know, fighting Holloway or Aldo, I think that's an incredible fight. I think, you know, Edgar Aldo is a little tougher. So I think it depends on matchups from a lot of different perspectives. But if Yair Rodriguez wins, I wouldn't be surprised if he's fighting for the title next.
Adam, let's go rapid fire in a couple of fights here. Some of the stories. I am shocked that you didn't say your favorite fight is the 115 women's title fight because you like me. I think you said it. Jessica Andrade, I said about whatever. I don't know. Some tweeter was cool enough to remind me. I said it 18 months ago that she'll be the champ.
Yeah.
So now what do you think? What do you think as you're on the eve here? I know you're very pro Jessica Andrade against Joanna Champion.
Yeah, I'll wait for the rematch after Andrade wins the title and Joanna's trying to get it back. That's when I'll be interested. I'll be interested in the fight at that time.
Why do you think she's going to win?
I do. I mean, I picked, like you, I mean, we've both been saying for a long time she was going to be the champion at some point. Now, is it going to be Saturday? I believe it is. But I think at some point she will be. She's got too much strength. She's so aggressive. It's so tough to deal with. And I know, listen, everybody loves Joanna. I love Joanna. Everything about her, she's amazing. I just think it's a tough style matchup. And I just think Andrade's strength and aggression and her ground game, I think, could really be a factor.
If you could see
in this fight as well,
if you could see Ryan McKinnell's face right now, it is amazing. He is so perplexed by you.
I just, from the standpoint that I feel like her strengths that you're talking about, which are her strengths, I think they're going to be the weakness in this fight, Adam. I think that aggression and that power plays right into Joanna's skill set. I mean, she's a very accurate striker, super high output. And she comes at weird angles, and she throws strikes that Jessica has never seen before. I know Jessica, you know, she's got a great pedigree. She's fought a lot of tough people, but she hasn't fought anyone like Joanna. But I did like Adam's guarantee. He slipped that in there real smooth-like.
Well, the thing about this is, and, you know, oddsmakers aren't always right, but everybody that I've mentioned the odds to has been completely shocked. Completely. Because I think you go into this, you're like, oh, Joanna, she's on a run. She's been killing people. She's, you know, she's popular. Everybody loves her. She's the champion. And, you know, Andrade is, you know, somebody who was kind of a journeyman at 135. She was 4-3.
Right.
In her 7 fights, and now she's come down and she's dominated. So people are like, yeah, she's a good fighter. You know, how big of a favorite is Joanna? It's getting close to pick 'em at this point. I mean, she's not a very big favorite at all.
The low number out there is 152. We got about a minute left here before we got to pay some bills. The big title fight on the card, the other title fight's big too, but heavyweights, Miocic, Stipe at 140 against JDS. So what do both of these guys look like? Is there any chance, because, you know, they already fought once, you know, is Stipe looking forward past his fight? What do you think?
I think it's a fight Stipe really wanted. I think he's, you know, it doesn't make sense for JDS to have the title fight except for everybody's kind of out and he was available. And Stipe wants to get that loss back. So I think it's a really important fight for him. I don't think it's a fight he would look past. I think it's a fight that really means something to him personally. I just think it's a really tough fight to call because Stipe has really been, I mean, obviously his power, that he's so athletic, and I think that's a strength that he has. But he doesn't have a huge, you know, speed advantage over Junior like he has some of his other opponents. I think it's a really, really close fight. I'm picking Miocic, but I'm not surprised either way in this one.
All right, Adam, we'll talk to you. Maybe we'll check in with you tomorrow. I'm sure you're excited to hear that we'll keep bothering you, but we appreciate a couple minutes, okay?
I love it. Look good. And Joanna and Jessica rematch coming up later this fall.
All right, coveringthecage.com. He's part of Cofield & Company. There you go, Adam Hill. Ryan McKinnell's going to stick around. We'll make some fight picks. We'll get to the odds as we close out a Thursday edition of the MMA Insiders.
MMA Insider Show. It's time for the MMA Insiders.
Main event. Let's make some picks here. Miocic, 140, JDS, 110. I thought the last fight was very close. I don't think this is that close a fight now. I think JDS has a lot of tread off the tires.
I don't know how much tread he has on his tires. We are certainly going to find out. And you mentioned that first fight. It is, without question, one of the greatest fights in UFC heavyweight history.
Awesome.
So they're not too old. You know, Junior is definitely taking some beatings. Miocic has been a little more clean, and obviously,
I mean,
the
dangerous part for Stipe is he will stay in the pocket and he will slug, and that you know you get caught.
Well, and you saw that in the first fight. He got tagged early in the first, and then in the third round, he caught a hook that changed the whole fight.
Man, I'm looking at some of these odds. They're crazy numbers.
Yeah.
I really like Damian Maia against Jorge Masvidal. And I'm getting almost dog money at like minus 105.
Well, there's a reason it's so close. Masvidal is finally, after a career spent toiling in somewhat obscurity, beating up really tough people and having a really fan-friendly type approach to fighting. Masvidal is an all-money fighter. You want to tune in and see him fight. He's surging right now. That said, so is Damian Maia. If this is one of those, this is a 50-50 fight, but I'm picking Masvidal because there's just a part of me that almost wants him to win. He's just so damn exciting. I playing my bias here a little bit, I guess.
So it is true. Basically, a couple years ago, I called Andrade as the champ when he was first getting down to 115 pounds. I hate these odds, though. So I'm actually picking. I'm confident Andrade can catch her because I think Joanna is almost too relaxed and is willing to fight with her back off the cage, which as long as she doesn't do that, she's going to win. But I do not want her back on the cage and letting this Andrade is a freaking I'm not trying to be derogatory here. She's a gorilla. She is a strong little lady at 5'2", who survived at 135. But I'm only getting 130. And the problem is I think Andrade will be gassed after about two rounds.
Perhaps.
And that's when Joanna will take over. So I'll take her at 160.
Well, you just said that you didn't like the idea of Joanna, you know, being somewhat too loose and with the back against the cage, but we were just talking about a guy like Floyd Mayweather, some of these really high-level fighters. One of their biggest advantages is remaining loose.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just don't want her to be lulled into a comfort zone because she survived many times with her back on the cage.
Sure.
Don't do, that's the only way this woman is going to catch you is if it turns into a phone booth fight where you can't get out. Don't do that. Just stay on the move, and she could win the fight.
Well, here's what I like. Joanna's a slight favorite here. She's an undefeated champion. If you're a money guy, when it gets bet down this close, go with the undefeated champion.
Yeah. Frankie Edgar and Yair Rodriguez. Rodriguez comes back at about plus 110. I'll take the veteran. But, I could see Frankie losing it.
I could see Frankie losing it.
For minus 132.
Yeah, I can't pick against Frankie Edgar if he's not fighting Jose Aldo. That's the truth of it.
Well, I really like Eddie Alvarez is a dog. So I really like Eddie Alvarez at plus 105 against Poirier at 130.
There's nothing wrong with that. Both all-action fighters. It feels like a crossroad for both guys. They've both been toiling around here, kind of going back and forth on wins and losses. I expect that to be fight of the night. That's my fight of the night. And I'm going to take I'll take Alvarez in that one.
We agreed on way too many fights.
Well, I could have played devil's advocate, but that's not my style, Cofield. I got to speak from the heart, from the truth.
One last update of the basketball game if you're looking for scores while we're doing our MMA show. The Rockets have not fought back into this game.
They're done.
In fact, they've kind of laid down here.
Stick a fork in them.
This is embarrassing. They are going to get skewered, and Harden's going to take a freaking beating.
Yep.
This is going to be awesome. James Harden, well, he probably won't, but if James Harden was to win the MVP because they do it before the playoffs.
Yeah.
They will just kill him for what happened in this playoff series, and it's not all his fault.
And meanwhile, Horseshoe Head Ginobili here after 15 years or however long this dude's been in the NBA, sitting here with big blocks and the old man Popovich and these Spurs continually somehow keep advancing. They're the anti-Clippers. You know, no expectations really outside of their winning pedigree, but you can't look at this San Antonio team and be like, well, they can compete with Houston, they can compete with Golden State. I really didn't see it, to be perfectly honest with you. Just a testament to the system.
66.
Damn
it, we have like 25 seconds
left. Are they the New England Patriots of the NBA?
Spurs?
Yeah.
No.
System guys?
No.
No?
Man, we're out of time. And I was going to squeeze in some tough 25 talk. Next time, right?
Next time.
Thanks,
Ryan. It was a pleasure.
We'll see you.
MMA Insider Show.